Everybody wants what you got. But there's only one you. Yeah, there's only one you. There's nobody, nobody like you. There's nobody, nobody like you. The way you walk, the way you talk, the way you move. Ask me again and I'll say it to you. There is nobody like nobody like you.
Good evening, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you along, everybody. As you know, we're still under lockdown for the social slash physical distancing that has to go on here in Manitoba and certainly across the world. Hope everybody's doing well out there. Hope everybody's being safe. With hockey in a standstill, obviously we're going to find some good stuff to talk about, and the interviews won't stop here on the show as we meet some great people and lots of amazing things that they've done in their careers. So let's get to tonight's guest without wasting any more time. We got a lot to talk about with her because she's done a ton of stuff. Last week on the show, we spoke to Autumn McDougall, who has done amazing things out at the University of Alberta. We heard about all the success that she's had out at the U of A. So I thought we'd stay in Edmonton this week for this week's guest. She, too, found incredible success on the ice as a member of the Pandas. Her name's all over the record books. She helped pave the way for amazing athletes such as Autumn, and she basically set the standard for, you know, the Pandas hockey program as it stands right now. Success has definitely followed her wherever she has landed, though, from the University of Alberta to the IIHF World Championships to Grant MacEwan University, where she's the head coach of the Griffins women's hockey program, who, before the shutdown, unfortunately, were gunning for a fourth consecutive ACAC championship. With MacEwan joining Canada West next season, it might be time to get a sense of who the new kids on the block are, especially since they're coming into Canada West with a pretty solid resume, if I don't do say so myself. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring to you, The Hockey Show is proud and honored and privileged and humbled to welcome a woman who seems to win just about everywhere she goes and in everything that she does, head coach of the MacEwan Griffins women's hockey team, Miss Lindsay McAlpine. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for that very, very lofty and probably over the top introduction, but thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
We definitely, like I said, have gone through some of the information, and I'm shocked that more people don't talk about you as being an example, but we're going to make that happen tonight, I think. So let's start off with the obvious. How are things going? How's the world of self-isolation away from the rink for you right now, Lindsay?
It's tough. If I'm going to be honest, I have a 22-month-old at home, and keeping him occupied and myself, you know, stepping away from the rink and my job, and you realize how much you love it when you don't have it, it's taken away. But, you know, we're hanging in there and finding, you know, lots to do in the day.
Well, that's good then. At least you're keeping somewhat busy, and obviously a 22-month-old will help that way a little bit.
Another level of busy, absolutely.
Exactly. So let's go back. Let's start way back in the 1980s, back on November 9th, in the early 80s anyway, when a bouncing baby girl was added to the McAlpine household. What was life like? What was life like for a young Lindsay growing up in Edmonton?
Oh, it was amazing. I had a phenomenal upbringing. My parents, Brian and Jeanette, and a younger sister, Claire, pushed us into various activities early on. Skiing, hockey, figure skating, soccer, golf. We got to, we were fortunate enough to kind of try everything. And you know what, my parents' only rule was that we had to at least see everything through for that year. And hockey was the, actually I should say ringette was my initial team sport love. I played that, age 4 and 5, just because my best friend and happened to be neighbor was also playing that sport. So I jumped on the bandwagon and played ringette for a couple years in Bunnies, and then the Ebony Girls Hockey Association was born, and I was part of the inaugural year there, and again kind of jumped ship with a few more friends that decided hockey was the way to go. And my parents, didn't have a ton of background in the hockey world, but went out and bought me a kind of basic set of equipment, and here I am today, still involved in the game.
And doing well in the game, might I add. So from humble beginnings to incredible finish here, or at least incredible build up to where we are now. Who were some of the teams you played for then? Because, again, people may not know,
as
things got started, some of the teams that sort of paved the way for the teams that are out there today.
Yeah, the most impactful of those being for me the Edmonton Rebels, which would be the equivalent to the midget AAA Pandas now, would be the Edmonton AAA team. There was only one AAA team back then in Edmonton. We had three teams total in Alberta. There was a Calgary team, a Red Deer team, and an Edmonton team. We practiced out of Collingwood Arena once a week and played one game a week. So times have significantly changed in the amount that a midget hockey player is on the ice now and doing off ice and doing nutrition and mental training. We didn't do any of that. I think we did the odd power skating session. But that was probably my most impactful 3 years of hockey, as that was the group. I'm going to say there was at least eight to 12 that ended up moving on and staying local and playing for Howie Draper at the U of A. So we were a large cohort of kind of that dynasty of success from 2000 to 2007 with U of A.
I mean, so let's jump into that, because I mean, we got a lot to go over in your university career then. 2002, 2003 is the first season you played there, correct?
Yes and no. I played 2001, 2002, but that was the year that I ended up having to redshirt because I was diagnosed with the Addison's disease. So I redshirted that year, and then I played the five following years. So I was fortunate enough to be involved with the program for six seasons.
So we'll talk a little bit about, you know, that whole medical thing in a little bit, but because I think it's an incredible story. But were you always set on going to U of A, or were there other teams that had come calling and said, you know what, we're interested in having Lindsay come play for us? Do you know of what went on there?
Yeah, there was, and I can't pretend that there was a ton. There was a few. I actually went down on a couple fly downs, and as soon as you kind of dabble into that NCAA world, lots of bells and whistles down there, and you know, dressing rooms were fancy and shiny and new. And I came back home and I was set on a couple different locations, and then I think the more I was at home and realized and saw kind of big pieces fall and headed in the U of A direction, names like Danielle Bourgeois was already there, Kristen Haig had decided to commit to U of A, who was my, you know, best friend since kindergarten. There was a few pieces like that where I started to think, you know, I do love home. I'm very, very close with my family. I'm very close with my extended family. They're all heavily involved in my hockey career. And why not stay, you know, in a city that's been so great to me, where a ton of my friends are already going and I know I can get a great education. So met with Howie and kind of turned away from the NCAA look and committed to the U of A.
So, I mean, you mentioned, you know, 01, 02, you were redshirting, but I mean, it seemed like that's when really the Alberta Pandas arrived on the scene, as you said, sort of a dynasty that went on for that entire time. You kind of jumped into a really unique situation, I guess, in 02, 03, because Howie had the Pandas just absolutely rolling at that point. Pandas hadn't lost a game to any CIS team since dropping a contest on February 17th, 2001. Additionally, the Pandas hadn't lost to any Canada West team since October 28th, 2000. As a rookie getting into sort of your first, you know, real Canada West action, what's it like joining sort of this invincible team? And do you feel like any additional pressure in trying to do your part to keep the win streak alive?
You know what? If I'm being honest, we barely even realized it was there. Howie is a coach. He doesn't mention things like that. We practice the same way every day. I think internally that team's drive for success, driven by, you know, our fifth years in our leadership group, was so strong that the external pressure didn't really matter. I actually found often the internal pressure to get better and to succeed and, you know, to be in a position that you wanted to be in, whether it was, you know, getting to the third line or getting onto a power play unit, that actually is what I found to be more intense and something that I think is what developed my game to the level that it did in the 5 years.
I mean, you get an incredible 5 years there. The streak did stay alive that season though. And I mean, I'll talk a little bit about it. You guys went 19-0-1 in conference play, 35-0-1 overall, and winning a second consecutive CIS national championship, the first one which you were a part of. What's it like winning as a rookie? Like, is that sort of like, man, like, this is awesome?
That's exactly what it was like. It was, you know, on probably the biggest stage. No, definitely the biggest stage that I had ever played on. And I had, like I'd mentioned before, my big support group and my family and my extended family were in the stands. And as a rookie, I got ice time and I got to play and I got to contribute to that win. And it was, you know, a great feeling. And I think, again, the best parts of it were probably that I was surrounded with a group of, you know, 20 of my closest friends. And, you know, we got to carry that celebration on and bring it back to Edmonton and to the U of A. And I think that's where it was, you know, the success piece became so important and so, I guess, measurable in a sense, where I got to understand, you know, what we'd been pushing for and working so hard for those 8 months leading up to it.
So, I mean, obviously celebration over the summer and getting back into the swing of things in 2003, 2004, targets are on your back, but you guys decide that, you know what, that one tie that we had last season wasn't good enough. So you guys go crazy and go 20-0 in conference play, 35-0 overall en route to a three-peat for the national championship. I got to ask, though, I mean, obviously winning another championship is fantastic, but in looking at the perfection that season, is that the most complete team you've ever played for in your career?
Oh, that's a tough question. I would say that's a hard question to give you a specific answer if it was my most complete team, because I can take pieces from every one of my years in terms of who the leaders were and, you know, who even our coaching staff was or our off-ice trainers, and say maybe that, you know, I could argue against that being our most complete year for sure.
Yeah.
Was I playing with some of the best players that I would ever play with in my life? Absolutely. But I would actually reflect back and say the year that we lost, which I know you're going to come to, is probably the most skilled in terms of complete skill, was the most skilled team in my 5 years with the Pandas. And just the way things happen in sport was the one year that we ended up losing.
Speaking of that, that's the next question. 04-05 saw the juggernaut Pandas tear through Canada West again with another 20-0 record. Ramping up competition again at the CIS National Championship. You guys were definitely one of the favorites going in, but you ran into a team that wouldn't be denied in the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks, who in the final beat you guys 4-1. I mean, it is the first loss, I guess, for you as a player as a Panda. It ended the 123 game win streak that you guys were on, which to me is just a baffling number. But what's the reaction in the room after? I mean, obviously losing the championship is one thing, but I mean, how's the room feeling after coming so close again?
Oh, if I'm being honest, it was complete devastation. To this day, I think if you spoke to players about that loss, there's still times where there's girls out there that will struggle to talk about Laurier. Which sounds so extreme, especially if we're talking about the world that we're in right now and the situation that we're in, but it was complete devastation. And it was, I mean, definitely attributed to the fact that we didn't know what losing was like. And for us, it was, the streak was one thing, but the bigger thing was the national championship, and to not be able to, you know, bring that back to the U of A, I think was probably equally as shocking as it was heartbreaking for the majority of that group.
So, I mean, for those that are asking, and again, these are just staggering numbers, a 110 game undefeated streak against CIS teams and a 123 game undefeated streak against university competition. Like, those numbers alone are ridiculous. And I mean, again, you can look back on it now and sort of laugh and whatever, but I mean, that will never be equaled nowadays with the parity and the talent that we see. So, I mean, what do you take from those numbers?
Well, and I think you just touched on it there. The parity and the talent in women's hockey now is so different than it was. And I'm not taking away anything from, you know, the groups that I played with over the years, but, you know, being heavily involved in the game now, you're right. That I can't imagine that streak would ever be touched or even come close to when you just even look through the Canada West numbers or, you know, any other team or league or conference across U Sports. I can't imagine that it would come close to being touched. And I think I was really fortunate to kind of be plunked into a group at the right time, the right place and the right time at the U of A, where, you know, somehow Howie had kind of attracted the most talent in the women's game within Canada at that time. And that's, I think, what we attribute the 123 games to.
So, I mean, 05-06 starts. You guys are definitely looking at unfinished business in terms of what happened the previous season. But another streak came to an end early in the season as the same team that you started the streak afterwards against, October 28th, 2000, the Regina Cougars downed the Pandas 4-1. And on October 21st, 2005, they ended the 86-game Canada West undefeated streak.
Okay.
I am shocked again that any team has gone through and won 86 straight games looking at the way the game's played today. 83-0-3 in that 83 of 86 games were wins. I mean, I would think that there's like a sense of relief, a freeing of some of the pressure after, I mean, again, I'm not saying losing is a good thing, but obviously losing that game, it kind of just frees you to play better hockey at that point because you don't have to worry about being perfect now.
Absolutely. That's absolutely, I think, the situation we are in at that point where, it, of course, in the moment, it didn't feel great to lose. It never did. That was a team that was so driven by success. So anything that wasn't the best for us was a failure in our minds. And, you know, looking back, and I think even within that season, if we, you know, chatted as a group or were setting goals, I think that moment where you did drop a game is sometimes in your best interest. And I think in that scenario, it was for the final outcome of that year.
I mean, that was the only loss you guys suffered that year, though, in Canada West play. You went 16-1-3 en route to another appearance at Nationals where you guys go through and you win, you know, your third CIS National Championship. What stands out for that season? And when you look back on it, considering, you know, you lost 1 year earlier, you had two major streaks and find yourself on top of the mountain again. What's the overall sense like? Is it a feeling of accomplishment? Is it a feeling of like, no, this is where we belong? Like, what's the overall sentiment?
Yeah, again, if I'm being honest, I think there's obviously always a sense of accomplishment to get through and win a national championship in any sport, and always was for us. But I think paired with that, and probably equally as much, was a sense of relief where, you know, not that you can breathe again, but you were like, okay, we knew we can do it and we did it. And, you know, let's see now what we can do in the following year.
So speaking of the following year, we'll focus on 06-07 a lot because it's your senior year. You did all sorts of ridiculously amazing things. So we'll start with you personally as you put together a 27-goal, 57-point season to win the Canada West scoring title while leading Alberta to a 21-3-0 record, first place in the conference. What stands out for you in that final season that you played when it comes to scoring and the total points you and your linemates ended up putting up that year?
You know, I actually don't really take it as something that was significantly different than my years prior. I just think it took me six years to kind of grow into the player that I was capable of becoming, if that makes sense. I'd say that's, I mean, obviously too, as you go and you've got increased confidence, and with increased confidence comes, you know, more time in, you know, special team or critical situations, which gives you more opportunities for points. I think all of those things were at play. I also was playing with two outstanding players. Both, I think, at times were involved with the national team program with Taryn Podlosky and Jenna Barber. So I would also argue that they made the game quite easy for me. And Howie put us on a line that year in you know, the day one of training camp, played together all through preseason, and it never changed. So I think that consistency piece was also a huge component of that group's success.
I mean, we always seem to see, and I mean, this is sort of just an aside on this, but we always seem to see, you know, those players who have some good chemistry anyway, sort of come together and play extremely well. I mean, you guys had something like, I don't know, it was like 160 points that season amongst the three of you. So, I mean, it seemed to work.
It seemed to work. Yeah. I have no idea how many points we had, but yeah, it was a good year and we got along. The three of us are very, very different personality wise, but got along really well, both on and off the ice. So that helps as well.
So you guys roll in the Nationals once again. This time you put the hurt, on a very, very good team in the McGill Martlets as you won 4-0, including beating some Olympic netminder named Charlene Labonte.
Yeah.
What stands out from that game when you look back on it in your mind in terms of the final game of your career?
Oh my goodness, a few things stand out. That was probably the game that, if I'm going to look back and remember a game the most in my 5 years, was the one I can, you know, paint actually vivid pictures of. And a couple of things come to mind. I was interviewed in that in the hallway probably 5 minutes before warm-up started, and the first question the interviewer asked me was, you know, do you guys think you have a decent chance to take down the Martlets? And I think I was a little caught off guard, because, you know, we've kind of spoken about it, in my time with the Pandas we were always the top ranked team, where you would ask the other team that question. And I think, you know, it kind of took me aback that we were now in the position where, you know, we were seen as the underdogs going into that game. That was my first kind of vivid memory. And my second, I think most obvious to most people's memory, is Taryn Berry, my best friend. Again, long-term best friend that I got to play with. Had an amazing career at the U of A. She scored a goal early on in the game, and it was an unbelievably beautiful goal from a player who, and again, not taking anything away from Taryn, but Taryn played a hard, gritty style hockey game, and she scored the most naturally, you know, beautiful goal scorer's top shelf goal at the time, probably one of the best goalies in the world. So those are my two most vivid memories from that game. And then, I mean, obviously I can also recall I was out for the final, you know, 10 seconds of that game, holding on to the win and knowing it was my last game as a Panda. And, it was, again, a moment that I'll never forget, celebrating that win.
That is fantastic to hear. I mean, obviously, that's a major moment in your career. There were some other major moments that season as well. You were a CIS First Team All-Star. You were the CIS Player of the Year that year. You were the Nationals Tournament MVP. Three pretty big major accolades to end your career with, anyway. Looking back at your list of accomplishments, looking back at your career, how do you feel about it? What do you feel, you know, is sort of the hallmark of your career?
Oh, the best thing that I took away from that group is the people that I am still closest with. In all honesty, obviously every national championship was amazing. The individual accolades are always nice, but the fact that I, you know, an example, last night we're in a lockdown situation and I'm on the phone on a Zoom call with four girls that I played with in that era, just having a chat and a laugh over a drink. That to me is the most impactful part. The girls that were there when, you know, my son was born, or how many of them I've got to see get married and, you know, go on and have kids and watch them develop and be successful in their careers. That to me is what I will forever cherish from that, you know, that 5 or 6 years that I was with the U of A.
That is awesome. That's a very good answer. And it seems like one that will stand the test of time. I let off the show talking about just how great you are. Do you want me to go over all of the record book stuff you hold?
That's okay.
Well, we're gonna, cause I think people need to know just how good you were. Okay. You don't have to say anything in this. You can just laugh. You can just do whatever. But here's where you stand from that final season and from your entire career, where you rank at the U of A and in CanWest hockey. So your 27 goals that season in your final season saw you lead the nation in goal scoring. It also ranks you as the fourth best all-time in Canada West. And it, even though it's actually the second highest goal total in one season, but we'll leave that aside. Your 16 power play goals, 16 power play goals that season, which to me is just incredible.
I think I just needed more time and space to score. I needed a player off the ice. 16.
That could be. I mean, who knows?
Probably.
I mean, it could just be that you guys drew a lot of penalties as well. But
that too.
16 power play goals that season is second all time for one individual season. Only Breanne George of Saskatchewan has scored more in one campaign, and she had 17. That's not a bad record to hold. Yeah. Your 30 assists ranks you fourth all time, but it's the third highest total for one season ever. Your 57 points also led the nation that season, and it's the second highest point total ever in Canada West. Only Taryn beat you in one season.
Good honor, Taryn.
Your 141 shots that season is second most ever by any player and was tied most recently by Calgary's Iya Gavrilova. Only Regina's Rhianne Wright had more, and she had 144. I don't know if that crazy means anything, but...
crazy.
Yeah, there you go.
I just don't know where all these stats are even posted.
Oh, I know where we go digging for stuff. We know where to look.
Okay.
Canada West-wise, your career, your 59 goals are fifth most ever at the University of Alberta and ninth most ever in the Canada West Conference. Your 69 assists are fifth most ever at the University of Alberta and eighth most in Canada West. Your 128 points career-wise is sixth most at the University of Alberta and eighth most in Canada West. Your 18 power play goals, 16 of which came in that final season, has you in 10th all-time in Canada West. You still hold the Canada West record for most assists in one game with 5, as you and Taryn both share the record, as you apparently both went crazy in a 9-0 win over Lethbridge on October 20th, 2006. Your 6 points in that game is also tied for third most ever in a Canada West game. The very next day, October 21st, 2006, you went out and wrote your name into the record books again when you victimized Lethbridge for the fifth fastest pair of goals by one player when you scored 31 seconds apart in an 8-1 win. And in stats and awards, I know Howie Draper will be proud of when he listens to this. You were an academic All-Canadian in 4 of the 5 years you were at U of A while being a first-team academic All-Canadian your senior year. You were also awarded the Kathleen Yetman Award as the female academic All-Canadian of the Year at the University of Alberta in 2006-2007. Now that you're sort of running a program and being part of a university program, obviously, we stress it a lot here on the show, student-athlete, the student comes before the athlete part, but when you hear players talking about how they get scholarships to come in and play hockey, how important is it to stress the actual academic, the education part of it in order to, you know, A, keep your eligibility, and B, simply, you know, for the future of whatever that player is going to be doing?
Oh, it's critical. I think it's absolutely the number one piece. When I'm recruiting a player, when I'm speaking to, you know, a group of athletes or parents or other coaches, if the academic piece doesn't work or doesn't fit, the hockey piece falls through. You can't, you know, and the number one thing I always say to players is you can't make a career out of hockey, unfortunately, in the female world as it stands right now. Hopefully there's a change there, but right now there's no career for you. So you need to get your career first, and the hockey's kind of a great addition to that, and adds a whole bunch of skills that, you know, you get to use in your future careers. But the academic piece, like you just said, the student absolutely comes first.
So, I mean, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, and we'll ask about it now because I think it's relevant. I don't think people realize that your career was almost derailed because of that medical issue. Can you describe Addison's disease, and more importantly, how are you doing? Is everything okay?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's you know, a really rare autoimmune disease where, like any autoimmune disease, your body decides another part of your body is something's wrong with it. So in my case, in Addison's disease, my adrenal glands, which function to produce your natural cortisol levels or your fight or flight response, all of that in your body, were attacked, and they basically kind of shriveled up and died. So my you know, I can laugh now because everything's great and I'm in great health, but it was a little scary for a while heading into my you know, that, you know, Howie, whenever I actually have no recollection of when I committed to the U of A, if I'm being honest with Howie, but sometime in my grade 12 year, early on in my grade 12 year, committed to U of A, you know, had started on a training program through Howie and our resources at the U of A. And, you know, starting in that spring, my energy levels were low. I, you know, would get these intense muscle cramps and muscle spasms, and started to lose a significant amount of weight without doing anything to lose that weight, which is always a little bit of a red flag. So, you know, the age that I was at, 17, everyone always, you know, the response was always mono, you probably have mono, you're tired. And then it turned into like, I was actually getting physically sick for, you know, probably at least 3 or 4 times a week. I started school in the fall, still without an answer. Things were kind of declining health-wise. I started to skate a little bit with the group because we started back in August, and I would have to leave most ice sessions early because of muscle cramps and fatigue, and it was so out of character for me. And eventually I got to a point where my blood pressure would drop so low that I was like, I wasn't fully unconscious, but I was in a state of, you know, kind of in and out of it a little bit. So was taken to the hospital in early October that year. I think actually right around Thanksgiving. And they finally figured out what it was, got me on the kind of right course of medication and action plan. And I got set up with an endocrinologist that I have to this day. And, you know, it took me, I think by the time I finally got out of the hospital, I was about 105 pounds at 5'8". It was definitely not a healthy hockey athletic body at that point. So I had a lot of work to do in terms of regaining muscle mass and strength. And that took me till probably, I think I got to step back on the ice with the U of A in late January of that year to put my skates back on and, you know, attempt to build those muscles back up. And I think, you know, fortunate in one sense that I was only just 18 years old, that, you know, your resiliency when you're young is quite good and your ability to bounce back was good. And I was, you know, put a lot of work in that summer and was ready to go for the following September. And well, I've been great ever since.
I was going to say, thank goodness everything has worked out for the best. Cause I mean, again, yeah, you've had a pretty stellar career, but that's only half of the hockey equation yet. You graduated though with a phys ed degree and an education degree, but you did your schooling didn't end there, excuse me, as you went back for more, pursued your Master of Arts in sports sociology with a focus on women's hockey. So for the lay person like me who knows really nothing about what that means, what exactly does that degree mean?
That's classic in the academic world, I think. It's the best explanation is I did my thesis ended up with a study on inter-team and interpersonal relationships in high-performance hockey. So I actually got to do a specific study on my playing career with the U of A and did a whole bunch of interviews and, you know, different stories and anecdotes about, you know, different interactions that I had that, you know, kind of built my path over the course of those 6 years. So that's what my master's was. And, you know, along the way, got to do some great classes. As we know, the U of A's graduate program's outstanding. And I got to do some great classes in a whole bunch of different faculties, kind of pushed by my advisor at the time. And I also got to help out Howie on the ice when I was a student in my couple of years following playing. So that was exciting as well.
We'll cover that in a second because that does come up here. But you were a little busy in at least one of those years after graduating. For those that are unaware, Lindsay was also a professional hockey player for a short time, suiting up for a couple of seasons in the Western Women's Hockey League with the Edmonton Chimos, playing against players such as Jenny Potter, Cammy Granato, and Danielle Goyette. What was that experience like joining the pro ranks?
It was awesome. Really different, obviously a different feel from the university style of hockey. But a neat part of it is I had a large group of players that had graduated either with me or before me that I then got to play with again. So that made it exciting. So I got to play there for, like you said, a couple seasons. And unfortunately, I'm not sure if you're going to get to this because you've got a lot of info, but it ended on in kind of a late January of my second season in, because I ended up having to get a back surgery for a bad herniated disc. So that's kind of was the end of my playing career, was with the Edmonton Chiefs.
I knew that you had stopped playing in January. I didn't know why. So that's good information, because I was going to say the next question leads right into it. You took a step back from playing in 2009. You joined Howie behind the bench of the Pandas, assistant coaching and certainly getting into the coaching side of things. How was your first sort of foray into coaching, and what was it like going from player to coach?
I never actually got to work beside Howie on the bench. I did a lot of stuff. Yeah, I coached, sorry, but I was on the ice as I was a practice gal.
Okay.
I was a glorified puck pusher for those years. which was enough for me. I got to dabble in the coaching side, and I got to see Howie from a different perspective and be involved in some different conversations, and absolutely was part of, you know, the reason that I'm still involved in coaching today.
So for those that don't know, you're also, when you're not doing all this hockey stuff, you're also a teacher. How's life going right now with no classes, no nothing going on?
It's different. I teach really, really part-time now because my McEwen career is obviously in the forefront. Right. So I stepped away from Edmonton Public. As soon as McEwen made that move to full-time coaching, which was, I actually can't remember the exact year, but probably around 2016. So I did get to teach for quite a number of years with Edmonton Public, and primarily at Vimy Ridge Hockey Academy. So obviously was coaching in a different capacity there, more of on ice instruction and skills instead of on bench coaching. But again, was a huge part, and actually was the exact reason that I ended up applying for McEwen, was after a Vimy hockey ice session. The coach that was with me then, Sean Bissell, actually, you know, leaned over and was like, "Hey, I heard McEwen has opened up a coaching position, a head coach for the women's team. Like, I think you should throw your name in the hat." I'm like, "Oh, no, I have no interest in doing that. I like my job here. It's great. I've stepped away from the evenings and weekends. It's kind of a nice change." And I went home that night and I was like, "Oh, you know, maybe that would be kind of cool to coach a university team, or even just see." And at that point I was like, "I don't know that I've got a great chance with all the coaches out there that are, you know, have done a lot more in the coaching world at that point than I had." And, you know, I threw my name in anyway and got an interview, and I was lucky enough to be at a school with an athletic director who was looking for somebody like me, who was, you know, more green in the coaching world and had played in the Canada West or at the Canada West level and at the U Sports level. And, you know, I kind of ticked the boxes there and I was offered the job, and, you know, I kind of had to take a day to decide if I was ready to, you know, throw my world upside down a little bit. But, you know, here I am today, and it was absolutely the best career move that I've ever made.
You said 2016. It was 2012 they made you a full-time head coach, but that's besides the point.
Oh, was it that? Okay, 2012.
Yeah.
See, the years are just blending together.
That's okay.
That's quite a big difference.
Yeah, well, a little bit, but I mean, if you didn't, you would be missing out on one of the honors that you got. But you spent 10 years there now, 10 years now with Grant McEwen.
Yeah.
Things didn't get off to a flying start, obviously. You were working to build a program and get things going. But you've shown your mettle throughout the years as the Griffins have continually improved, and you've been honored as the ACAC Coach of the Year 4 times. 2013, 2014 would be the first time, and 3 straight years from 2016, 2017 to 2018, 2019. I want to know, because I think it's super interesting when we sort of talk about, you know, teams that are expanding and teams that are growing and teams that are getting better. We saw it over the last number of years with Mount Royal, who used to be in the ACAC, mm-hmm. here in Canada West, in terms of the way that they've grown and the way that they've gotten better. I mean, how much pride do you take in building a program from the ground floor up to its current standing as one of the best to have ever skated in the ACAC?
Oh, massive pride. The group that we have currently, and, you know, that fifth-year group that's moving on, that's arguably been a huge piece in changing, you know, our entire group's culture. I'm massively proud of them, and I'll I think as a coach and as I move on, and who knows how long I do this for, but I think it's a group that I'll forever remember in the push for, you know, changing McEwen's path and the success that we've had in the ACAC, and even, you know, helping us get into the Canada West League.
Griffins entered the season, at least in the postseason anyway, looking to capture a fourth straight ACAC championship. Obviously that didn't happen. That dream was dashed yeah. when season was canceled under the pandemic threat. Being that this was literally the last chance you guys had to go out on top in the ACAC, is there some disappointment in not being able to finish the season?
Oh, absolutely. Huge disappointment from our group. Last chance ever likely to play Nate, who is one of grown into our biggest rival, to, you know, hoist another trophy is always, you know, you can look back on a season and reflect on all the success that we have, but to, you know, be able to finish it off in your own terms and, you know, hopefully, like I said, hoist a championship trophy again is significantly different than kind of finishing your last game, you know, after the fact, knowing that it was your last game when it's a little bit out of your control.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, I mean, I think there's lots of teams that sort of...
Oh, a lot of teams that are in that same situation, yeah, yeah that I can that definitely...
Everybody yeah. sort of just shake their fist at and be yep, angry at, but...
that's the way the world is, yeah, things are bigger than hockey, and you find exactly. out real quick. Yeah.
I'll jump ahead to a day, though, that I think that is huge for a number of reasons. May 9th, 2019 was a monster day.
It was.
Griffin's history changed that day as it was announced that Canada West accepted the application for both the McEwen Griffins and the Trinity Western Spartans to join the conference at the U Sports level for hockey. I know that Grant McEwen had been trying for a while to make the jump. I had read about some of the stories. But you had mentioned in your interviews, and I kind of was caught off guard by this, that there were people that were against adding your school and Trinity Western to the hockey programs or to the hockey conference. Like, were you ever told why that people were against it?
I think there's, you know, always a group out there that likes the status quo, and things were running very smoothly in Canada West Hockey. So not to by any means take anything away from them. If I was in that seat, I don't know that I would have thought any differently. And I think another big component is the amount of teams that are already in Alberta versus the other provinces, such as Manitoba, such as BC and Saskatchewan, where now we're looking at we're recruiting against 9 different post-secondary teams in our province. And the other schools are, I think those were big reasons where then they're recruiting against less. So that would be, you know, the biggest things that we heard. And obviously cost is always a factor for athletic departments, especially in a time right now where it's adding another team to travel to. And then there was the, you know, how scheduling going to work? Are we going to add games? There was a whole bunch of different pieces that when changes in the wind, I think there's always people that are naysayers and a little bit hesitant, but in the end, you know, we won the vote and here we are. And hopefully we're starting in that league in September.
I don't know. I mean, again, I'm just talking from, you know, I mean, we do the broadcasting for the Bisons. We certainly keep up with everything that's going on. I can't think of a worse way to sort of frame women's hockey, considering that the growth of women's hockey has been exponential over the last decade. Like, it seems almost elementary to let you guys in, yet I'm shocked there were people against it. Like, that, I get the change is scary, but if that's what it is, if change is what's scaring people off, I don't understand that. I don't understand that.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that perspective, of course. And I mean, in the end, I think all of that was hearsay and, you know, maybe things that we were guessing at as to why, you know, schools were kind of pushing back against having new teams join. But like I said, in the end, they supported us and they have been super welcoming and supportive since that date, regardless.
So according to my count, because I've been keeping tabs on what's going on, you guys have recruited 9 players for next season. Maybe I'm wrong with that number. I could be wrong. But 9 players so far for next season, including a few we've seen here in Winnipeg at a couple of events. I guess the big question is, for fans that are coming down to Wayne Fleming Arena to see the McEwen Griffins play, what should we expect out of your team next season? What kind of team are you planning? I mean, I know what you know, the idea of the team is to ice it. But what are your you know, your sort of highlights for your team that you're trying to sort of stress to join Canada West here?
Big question, but I think you will see a young team. Like you just said, we have 9 new players coming in. We've got a large group of second and third years as well. Not to say that we don't have, you know, some fourth and fifth years in that mix also. I think you'll see a team that's very similar to the Griffins team of the ACAC, where, you know, we're relentless. We're never going to stop. I don't think you'll see a big focus on physicality or size from our group. That's not necessarily a style of play, but I also don't think you're going to see a U of A or a U of S, you know, small but exceptionally fast group either. I think we've got a good mix of both. And I, you know, my hope for next year is that we're competitive and we can add to the Canada West brand.
I mean, I'm excited to see you guys play, obviously. I mean, again, reigning 3-time champion out of the ACAC, always, you know, exciting to see a brand new team come in who has a ton of success at another level. So we're looking forward to it.
Awesome.
For fans who may want to go to Edmonton to see their favorite Canada West team play, you guys actually play in downtown Edmonton, the downtown community arena attached to Rogers Place. What makes this rink perfect for Griffins hockey?
Well, obviously the proximity to McEwen. We're, as the last McEwen building ends in the downtown core, we're about a 2.5-minute walk to the front doors of the arena. So that proximity piece is massive, and was a huge change from my earlier years at McEwen, where we were a little bit of a traveling road show. We were in probably 5 different arenas in my early years. We kind of changed local city rinks every season. We never had a dressing room. And I think all of these pieces helped in our success, because, and not to say the rink is going to continue this for us, but ever since we moved into that arena, we had won a championship, having that kind of identity piece and that home and, you know, the consistency of a practice and a game rink was huge for our group. And of being partnered, or being not partnered, but I mean, the Oilers have worked with us as a partner, as you know, the OEG and the Oil Kings, obviously a little bit more important for the men's connection there, but always nice to be involved with that level of hockey.
I mean, if you guys defend home as well as you have in the past, I think it's going to be a dangerous place for people to play. We always joke that
let's hope
we always joke that Claire Drake Arena is where teams go to have dreams die. So maybe the downtown arena there is kind of the same idea then. So
we can hope.
I think that one of the coolest facts about you, and I don't know if people are aware of this either, you have a double IHF gold medal on your resume. How did the opportunity arise to coach the Australian national women's team?
Yeah, that was a crazy, but amazing opportunity. I got a phone call one day from actually one of my really good friends. See, another Pandas hockey connection through Taryn Fields, her wife, Kelly Bouchard, who had been with the national program for a number of years. Got a phone call from Mel Davidson asking, you know, if she knew anyone that would be interested. They were looking for a female that was coaching at the U sport level that would have some time to step away from, you know, family and home life. And, you know, Kelly threw my name out there, though I wasn't coaching at the time in U Sport. I was obviously coaching in the ACAC, but for them, I think they were like, you know what, it's university hockey. They wanted a younger female. There wasn't a ton of us out there at the time. You know, they gave me a call, connected me with the director of hockey ops down in Australia. And that's kind of where it was born. And I ended up getting to go down to Australia every December. We would put on a training camp, choose our team. And I would then head back home after about 3 weeks, where a couple of the weeks I got to kind of spend getting to know the girls and traveling around a beautiful country. And then in April, you know, anywhere between March, you know, the March, April timeframe when our season wrapped up was usually when the championship was. So I would get to meet the team and fly out to, you know, the various locations. We were in Korea and Spain and Prague and different locations for training camp, and then on to Worlds. And like you mentioned, we got to win, though it was nowhere near Division One or a Division One championship. It was in level 2B, but equally as exciting for that group of athletes, and got to come home with a gold medal there, which was a very, very different experience.
So, I mean, yeah, you guys did go over 2014-2015 to Spain, and you guys played in the IIHF Division II gold medal game and won the gold medal, promoting you guys up to Division A. But, I mean, for Australian women who really have never – I mean, again, we're talking about a fairly young program for a national team. Have any of them ever experienced something like that before?
Very few of them. It was a really eclectic group to coach, and probably one of my most challenging coaching experiences in – trying to, you know, blanket even a system across a whole group of players where my, you know, age range was 14 to about 40 and my, you know, skill level was NCAA Div 1, you know, a player from Duluth all the way down to, you know, 3 years new to hockey. So that was, it was a very interesting coaching experience. But so some of the girls had, you know, experienced hockey at a high level, and some it was absolutely their first time.
Obviously, you got family, and are you still going to do it? Are you still going to go back if there's an opportunity in the future?
You know, I had to step away. It was a tough decision for me because I had become close with a bunch of the athletes and, you know, my assistant coaching staff there. And but I got pregnant, and the timing was not going to work out for me to be overseas for extended periods of time. Had my little guy, and at this point, especially with our move to Canada West, I likely will remain uninvolved with the program. I still check in and see how they're doing and touch base. And but in terms of actually being over there and head coaching, I can't see that I would pick that up again anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. I just was curious.
Maybe it was a really tough decision because I did get to see some amazing parts of the world and be involved with some amazing athletes and people.
Away from the rink, you played a little ball hockey in Edmonton, but I think one of the coolest things that I found, the ball hockey is great, but one of the coolest things I found, though, is that you're one of the Alberta Medical Association's Youth Running Club ambassadors. How did you get involved with that organization?
Wow, you do have it all. That is amazing. I got involved with that organization through a friend who was a heavily involved in kind of the Edmonton, you know, active community from yoga and Lulu and a whole bunch of different things that she did with her career. She ended up taking a role with them. And they were looking for, again, females to partake as an ambassador. And I, jumped at the opportunity and have been involved in a couple events with them and some different Skype kind of interviews and things with young female athletes, kind of encouraged that healthy lifestyle, you know, with the focus being on running. And again, running is a passion that I've kind of taken up in my post-playing career. So it was something that I was really excited to do.
Before I let you go, because I think this is only fair now that we've basically occupied an hour of your time.
No worries.
It's only fair, I think, if I let you plug High Tempo Hockey. It's a business that you do run. So feel free to soapbox a little bit if you want to talk about your business.
Thanks. Because it could be a tough year for the business this year. actually, I'm gonna credit High Tempo with being my first love for coaching. I was 17 years old, actually, that summer heading into my year with the U of A. And one of our assistant coaches at the time, Justin Reynolds, was the owner of High Tempo Hockey. And he, you know, had put a call out for some players on the team that wanted, and players and new recruits that wanted to be instructors. And, you know, I jumped at the opportunity, you know, coaching hockey, awesome summer job. So worked a bunch of camps with him. And that was at age 17. And I did it every single summer up to the point when I was, I don't even know how long I've owned High Tempo, probably close to 12 to 15 years now. So I had instructed up until that point, and he approached me and asked if I wanted to take over the company. And I made the decision to do that. And it's been an awesome, awesome move for me. I just get to stay connected with the grassroots part of the game, where I get to work with, you know, go out on Saturday mornings and work with 4 and 5 year olds that are just learning to play, and you know, get to play silly games like dog catcher and not talk about forecheck or power play or things like that for a change. And, you know, it always brings you back to why you started and why you play and, you know, why you love the game. But again, I can come full circle and say, like I mentioned earlier to you, that connection piece that I have with people from the U of A, and that was one of my first ones that have, you know, evolved into a great business for me, was a connection at the U of A. And those things are, you know, something that I'll be forever grateful for with that program and being a part of it and a huge part of my life for the 6 years and then for, you know, hopefully forever.
So I will say, if you're in and around the Edmonton area looking for a hockey, some fun hockey schooling to go to, look up High Tempo Hockey, excuse me, as, again, hopefully the rinks will be open and you guys can have classes this summer.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Lastly, before we let you get out of here, Lindsay, because I know you got 100, probably 101 other things to do, especially with your little guy running around there. Let's ramp up the competition a little bit. Let's get you set for next season. After everything you've been through under him, sort of certainly learning from him, certainly taking instruction from him, are you excited to return to Claire Drake Arena and show your sensei, Mr. Howie Draper, exactly what the student has learned over the past number of years as you guys get ready to face the Pandas?
Oh, I can't wait. Probably the number one question I get asked when I'm being interviewed about moving to Canada West is, you know, me facing off on the opposite side of the rink against Howie. And of course I'm excited for it. And is it going to be a huge daunting challenge? Absolutely. They're a program to this day that are still, you know, one of the top and if not the top in the nation. And I think he'll have a sense of pride also. I hope he does anyway, that, you know, he can look across the ice and see that all four coaches with me on the bench are past players of his. And, you know, we got to start creating our own legacy, and hopefully we can find success, whatever that might be for us against the Pandas.
Well, he spoke highly of you on Twitter when I was mentioning you coming on the show here. So he definitely has pride as to how far you've gone so far, but it's going to be kind of weird.
Oh, awesome.
You'll also get to face off against Danielle, who you've had playing experience against as well. So, I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah, the hockey world is quite small, especially the female hockey world out there, so...
So, I mean, it should be good for next season. We are excited to see you to come to Winnipeg next year. When you do, don't hesitate to stop by the press box. We'll definitely say hi to you for sure, but all the best over the summer. Hopefully, knock on wood, this is all done by the time September rolls around and we can get back on the ice.
Absolutely.
And see the Griffins in their first ever season here in Canada West hockey. Thanks for doing this today, Lindsay, and I mean, we'll be watching for you next year for sure.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great one.
So there is Lindsay McAlpine. Glad to have her on the show today. Glad to have had a chance to talk to her. She's a fantastic woman who is going to do great things in Canada West as the head coach of the McEwen Griffins. Obviously, she's done a ton of great things already as an Alberta Panda. Certainly glad to have her back in the conference, and certainly great to have the McEwen Griffins as part of the conference moving forward. That being said, folks, we are out of time here on the Hockey Show again for another week. Thanks for joining us here. Up in the air for next week. I'm not sure. We're waiting on confirmation for an interview. If it doesn't happen, then we will find something to talk about for sure. There's lots going on in the world of hockey right now when it comes to the entire coronavirus and everything that's going on. In saying that, though, folks, be safe. Keep your distance from people. Physical distancing, social distancing, all that stuff. Make sure you're ensuring that 6-foot radius, but be safe and please stay home. We need to get through this as fast and certainly as safely as possible. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. Thanks for tuning in on the Hockey Show. This is 101.5 UMFM.